You're listening to the Save the Marriage Podcast. Your marriage can be saved and strengthened if you have the right information. Join Dr. Lee Baucom as he explores ways for you to improve your relationship and your life, starting right now.
Hey, this is Lee Baucom. Welcome to the Save the Marriage Podcast. This is the podcast designed to help you save and restore your marriage, no matter where things are right now. Now, I'm kind of recording this at a different place. I'm not in my home where I usually am recording. I'm actually in a hotel room. And the reason I'm in a hotel room is not because I'm in trouble at home, but because I'm at a conference. And sitting beside me at that conference was a person I got to know over the course of the day. And he was telling me about a seminar he went to. It was a marriage seminar. And he told me about some of the stuff they talked about. And I immediately went, you know what? I've got to do a podcast on that because that is such an important thing to talk about. And what we were talking about is breaking your agreements. So before I get you into trouble, let me explain a little further what I mean. We have lots of ways we can think about agreements. One is that we have agreements with other people, right? Like, I agree that I'm going to do this. I'm going to go pick up the kids, or I agree I'm going to go to the bank, or I agree that we'll work together and we'll have this cool business, or I agree that we're going to volunteer at that event and I'll be there. Now, when I'm talking about those kind of agreements we have with other people, including our spouse, those are agreements we keep, because agreements in that kind of way, they're the social agreements we're talking about, are the ones we definitely want to honor. In fact, if we're trying to build up goodwill in a relationship, it's so vitally important that we honor those agreements, because that keeps us trustworthy and that keeps us with a good reputation and able to be dependable. And those are all important factors. These agreements that I'm talking about, though, are agreements we have about the world and agreements we have about our spouse. And the person that we have this agreement with is ourself. Now, the idea of having these agreements, I first came across in the book The Four Agreements by Don Miguel Ruiz. Now, whether you believe the background story of that book or not, it's great psychology. And Don Miguel Ruiz talks about the fact that we've made agreements, things that we believe that may be agreements we've made because of culture. We might make agreements with parents about beliefs about the world, and we don't even know it. In other words, these agreements are unconscious beliefs that we hold. And so we agree to these beliefs. And I really like that term because, you know, you kind of think about those two parts of yourself having a conversation. And at some point when you're having a conversation, when you're trying to make sense of something, you make an agreement with yourself about what that means. And it becomes an unconscious belief system. For instance, you might have something that happens to you. And when that something happens to you, you have to find some interpretation to it. And so once you have that interpretation one time and it happens again, the process repeats. And each time it repeats, you begin to solidify the belief, usually without even challenging it or examining that belief. It just kind of comes together. And so you build this belief. And the more times there is a pattern, you build the belief. So let's talk about why that happens for a minute. One is that we have a huge amount of information coming our way. We're inundated with information in our culture, so much so that we have to find some shortcuts in order to manage it. Our brain is not designed to take in lots and lots of information. Our brain is designed to target information. And so we begin to take shortcuts in our thinking. And unfortunately, not always are those shortcuts particularly helpful for you or your relationship. And this is particularly true around these beliefs, these agreements we have about what's going on in our marriage, about what's going on with our spouse, and usually even about ourselves, because we tend to be a little kinder to ourselves than we are to other people. For instance, there is the attribution error in psychology, and I think that's one of the important things to always remember. The attribution error says that if I do something wrong, I see it as I made a mistake. if you do something wrong, I see it as you have a character flaw. It's not a mistake you made. There's something foundationally wrong with you. And so, you know, if I were to lie and you caught me in a lie, I would have a reason of why I did that. But if you were to lie and I caught you in that lie, I would know that there's something wrong at your very core, that for whatever it is, you just can't be honest. You're a pathological liar. We do this so many times that we begin to lose track of this. We let ourselves off the hook while we're kind of setting the hook for the other person. And this is particularly true with a spouse. So the exact things that we do, we would excuse ourselves. The exact things that a spouse does, we hang them out to dry for. And so a lot of the times when we start looking at these agreements, we have to recognize that in making these agreements, we tend to have not noticed our own role in the process. For instance, let's say that you have a spouse that you have attributed certain characteristics to. For instance, I often see people who say, well, my spouse is just cold. That's just the way my spouse is. Or my spouse is just controlling. That's just the way my spouse is. Or my spouse is angry. That's just the way my spouse is. Or a term that I've heard very often lately is, my spouse is narcissistic. Now, just as a side note, I'm not saying that there are not narcissistic people, but that term has become so used in our culture that it barely has any meaning whatsoever from a psychological perspective. If anybody thinks about themselves or makes choices based on themselves, they're often labeled narcissistic, and that's not the clinical term. And so when I'm talking about this attribution, even that very grab of that term means something that we've already attributed. Narcissism, not good. In fact, some people will say, well, can a narcissistic person even love? Well, unfortunately, what we've done is we've made narcissism equals sociopath or psychopath, and they are not the same thing. So now I'm chasing a bit of a tangent there, but just to say that sometimes we have these beliefs, whether it's about a spouse being cold or controlling or angry or narcissistic or dismissive or whatever we want to add to that. Those are these beliefs that we've built about a spouse, that people build about their spouse. For instance, let's take one. Let's put it around a common place of conflict in a relationship, and that would be around sex. So maybe somebody's interested in sex, and they approach their spouse, and their spouse says no. And so in that process, we have to kind of say, well, you know, what's wrong with my spouse that they don't want to do that? Why are they rejecting me? And so if it happens a number of times, we take on that rejection. And first, we might often say, well, there's something wrong with me, right? There's something that I'm being rejected for. But eventually, over time, we have to rebuild that. We have to make an agreement with ourselves around that because, you know, we're kind of sensitive around those areas. And we say, oh, there's something wrong with my spouse. You know, my spouse is frigid, or my spouse is unloving, or my spouse is unavailable. And we come up with all these pieces that make it about the spouse. So we make it that something is wrong with my spouse. And so we might say, you know, my spouse never wants to have sex with me, or my spouse always rejects me, whether that's true or not. And many times we use that as the kind of the crux of the next actions, where we say, well, I'm not even going to try anymore. I'm just going to give up. And then we might say, well, you know, that's because I've been taught that that's not okay, or that's because I've been taught that I'm going to be rejected. But the fact is that we have created an agreement about sex without usually even talking about it with the spouse. Or what about cold, my spouse being cold? There are lots of reasons why a spouse might act coolly in a situation. And oftentimes it's not about me. It's not about you. It's about the spouse. And I remember years ago, at one point, my wife and I were having some discussions, and I kept thinking she was angry with me. And she finally said, you know, I can be angry and it have nothing to do with you. And that was one of those places where I had to really mark down in my mind to remember that just because somebody was in an emotional state didn't mean that it had anything to do with my actions or inactions. So the first thing we want to do is to kind of register that maybe it has nothing to do with me. Now, it could. But the only way we find that out is instead of making an agreement with ourselves, we might ask and make an agreement with a spouse that if there is some situation that we're going to talk about it, that we're going to work through those pains and troubles and see if we can get to the place where we're both on the same page about what's going on. But what generally happens, somebody responds coolly, we assume that we have done something wrong or that there's something wrong with them. And we begin to build that into an agreement. And when we take it that way, we start looking for that. So if you start looking for a spouse being cool or cold and distant towards you, you might begin to respond differently because you're afraid of what that's going. So you back off a little bit. And when you back off a little bit, well, the relationship cools. And over time, we get to the place where, sure enough, it is a cooled relationship. It's a cold relationship. So what do you do? Well, this is where I'm challenging you to break the agreement you have about your spouse, not the agreement you have with your spouse, but the agreement you have about your spouse. Look for those agreements you have with yourself about your spouse. And there's an easy way to find them. Whenever you find yourself saying always and never about your spouse, you've probably landed on an agreement. It's possible that there are some truths there, but many times, in fact, I don't want to be absolute, but almost always, absolutes are pointing to agreements we've made, to hidden beliefs that we have that are missing the light of day. So begin to listen to your internal dialogue about when you say you're always angry with me, you never talk to me, you always are controlling, you never want to have sex, you're always spending the money. Now, these are often phrases that we go through our head without ever voicing them, but we act upon them. And so our hidden beliefs, those quiet places in our head, begin to change how we interact with our spouse. And that's the danger of this. So let's go through this exercise. The first is to begin to look at those agreements with yourself about your spouse. Look for the alwayses and the nevers. And as you do that, decide, this is step number two, decide that they may not be true. It's possible, just suspend a place there, that it may not be true. And then propose other possibilities. So when you say, my spouse is always angry with me, you may begin to look at other possibilities. Well, there are times when my spouse is not angry at me. I remember the other morning, you know, my spouse wasn't angry at me. And so now you've got proof against your always. The second thing is you may go, maybe it's not about me at all. You know, if I'm judging my spouse at the end of a long day of tangling with kids or with work or with any other part of life, it may just be exhaustion and it's a bad time. So just begin to propose other possibilities. Even in the process of proposing those other possibilities, you begin to break the hold those agreements have upon you because you're already saying, you know what? I no longer agree. I no longer hold that to be true. The next one is to then begin to see the spouse as doing the best your spouse can. Now, let me say this. This is one of my core beliefs. So this is an agreement I have with myself that people do the best they can where they are. That doesn't mean that they're always at optimal performance, but given what's going on in life, they're doing the best they can where they are. You know, if I've had a hard day at work and I just don't have any more energy, sometimes I'm just sitting in front of the TV and that's the best I can do at that moment, given where I am. That doesn't mean after a half hour of resting, I might not be at a better place. Or if maybe you've got lots and lots of stuff going on and there's just not as much quality time together, you may be able to say, you know, my spouse is doing the best I can, given all that's on my spouse's plate, and I'm going to give a break. Because when you begin to look around and say, my spouse is doing the best my spouse can do, and when you begin to generalize that to the general public and say people are doing the best they can where they are, you also include yourself in that. You're doing the best you can where you are. And then you can begin to work to do a little bit better because you change where you are. But begin to see your spouse as doing the best your spouse can where your spouse is right now. That can change in 15 minutes, it can change in 2 hours, it might change in a week, but that's a statement of doing the best you can where you are. Then the final step is to choose that there are other options. You don't have to choose one of those options, but to choose that there are other options to that core belief you've built. When you just decide there are other options, you begin to act differently. If you begin to say, you know, maybe my spouse is acting coolly right now because my spouse is exhausted. And my spouse is exhausted not because of me, but because of work. I'll just hold that up. And if I do that, I might start acting nicely towards my spouse and say, you know what? I know it's been a hard day. Let me rub your feet. Let me draw a bath. Let me nurture you some. Because one of the things that often happens with these agreements we have about a spouse is that it changes who we are and how we behave with that spouse. And so if we can get away from those agreements, and if we can decide that they may not be true, that there are other possibilities, when we see that maybe our spouse really is doing the best they can, then we get to choose that there are really these other options, and we can begin to transform how we interact. That's also a matter of where I talk about taking full responsibility for our lives, because it's suddenly we're no longer able to say, well, this is my spouse who is, you know, this problem, and that's why we're stuck. We can say, there's an interaction here. There's a pattern here, and I've taken shortcuts on understanding, and maybe those shortcuts have been kind of short-sighted, and maybe they've also short-circuited our relationship. Now let's get back on track. Let's move to a different place and see if we can move our relationship to a better place. If this kind of makes sense to you, if you're saying, you know what, I have made an agreement, but I'm really not sure what it's all about anyway. I'm really not sure how to move beyond that. Maybe you're even at that point where you're, you know, things have gotten to the place where you're even afraid to take the next step. Well, I've got a plan for that. That's part of what the whole system is about. I've created the Save the Marriage system, and that system is to help you understand what the next step is. And the reason you want to know what the next step is because if you have those fears of making a misstep, you've got a guide to help you step by step through that process. Now, if you already have the Save the Marriage system and you're still wanting a little more help, a little more guidance through that process, then I also have the virtual coaching program, which is a great way of getting responses from me so that you can take the system and make it much more applicable to your situation. If you're interested in a system, if you want that to get a grab hold of that system and run with it, there's a link right there on the website, or you can go to savethemarriage.com. If you're interested in the virtual coaching, you can email me, lee@savethemarriage.com, or you can click the link and check out. Just go to savethemarriage.com/virtual coaching, all lowercase, one single word there, virtual coaching, or just contact me or click the link at the bottom there, and we can get you started with that. Either way, what we want to do is make sure that you're letting go of those agreements that keep you stuck and beginning to understand how to unfold this and get to that next step. This is Lee Balcom wishing you the best as you work to save your marriage.
You've been listening to Save the Marriage podcast. For more information and help, please visit us at savethemarriage.com.